Hello, I'm Stephanie Belcher.
And I'm Del Belcher, and welcome to...
Learn to Like Each Other.
Yay!
I don't think we've done a podcast for a very long time.
Listen, there are two biggies. One, we're living in the pandemic. Two, we had a baby.
I got real knocked up and I was really tired and sick.
Baby's here.
Well, just growing the baby, I didn't do anything extra. I don't handle pregnancy very well.
You were a champion. You were beautiful. You were a beautiful vessel upon this earth, bringing life.
We didn't even do Christmas cards this last year, and I've done Christmas cards every year since I was 16.
Uh-huh. And so let's get the big tiger off the table, is the pandemic made things really disappointing and depressing, and I'm pretty sure that people could have used our advice, but we were like,
the article stuff.
Yeah. We needed our own time.
Well, we had time, and I think we talked about doing it, but we were just both so overwhelmed.
Yeah, overwhelmed, work, layout, baby, this, that, the other thing, and it was just wild, but we're here and we're seeing it through. And how are you holding up with baby, pandemic, everything?
So we had a baby. Her name is Georgia. She's gonna be 4 weeks old Tuesday, and she's healthy. Mm-hmm. She's eating really well.
She's perfect.
So I have another 8 weeks of maternity leave after this. But Del and I have both been working remotely in the state of Michigan since mid-March.
Yeah. Yep. I feel like I'm in a movie where they say, stay away. Stay out of the limelight. Stay out of the papers. And I just stay in my house.
Oh, but Georgia is in the studio with us.
Oh,
so
yeah.
If you hear baby sounds... She just ate, so she should be good on that front, but who knows if she'll poop in a second.
Baby's first podcast. So big sister Carly, little sister Georgia, and they just love each other. Yeah.
Yeah, so we've been trapped in the house, pregnancy, baby, there's a pandemic.
Temp check, Steph. How are you doing? What's your temp?
About what?
About life. Pandemic, baby. How are you feeling?
Baby-wise, I think we're doing pretty well. We're doing better than we did the first time.
You. How are you?
I know, but I feel like with a baby, it's a royal we.
Okay, gotcha.
Post-baby, so I was in the labor room an hour and a half, and when we timed how long it took me to push, it was 4 minutes.
It was 4 minutes. I have it on video.
So that was pretty quick. My recovery this time versus last time has been a lot better, mm-hmm. mostly because I didn't overdo it as quickly.
We didn't go to Aldi on the way home from the hospital.
Yeah. Turns out when you like walk a mile the day after you give birth, they frown on that.
But you recovered well and you're doing a really good job right now too.
I feel like since we already got one out of the way, for me, I feel like I'm less anxious and I don't feel as lost and clueless. Mm-hmm. And I feel more confident.
Yeah.
So I'm liking two. I didn't dislike one, but I'm really liking two.
Yeah, I feel like I know what I'm doing.
Yeah.
You ever like... have something really important and you've never done it before and then you're just like, and then you do it again. It's like, okay, I got it.
Yeah, the first time is always, what am I doing?
It's like you can apply that to like everything. But with a baby, it's like something that's alive and has your name in it. It's bananas.
Well, before we had Georgia, I Googled whether people liked having one kids or two kids more, or whether the first or the second was harder. And it was just a mixed bag of... It depends on what the baby is like, how much help you have, if you have any help, how your labor went, mm-hmm. and I don't know.
Well, I'm in a constant state of brain fog.
That's true.
And, but I think we're doing really well.
Yeah, I think it's going pretty well.
I think considering all of the things, we are doing a really good job. And, what else could we do? Like...
So let's do a quick recap of what's happened since we podcasted. Baby, pandemic, George Floyd.
Black Lives Matter.
Black Lives Matter.
Over. Everyone's anti-racist, which is good.
Ruth Bader Ginsburg has cancer. There's no movies coming out of Hollywood.
No movies. Trolls World Tour.
Australia is on fire, but I think that was pre-pandemic.
That was, I don't think Australia's on fire anymore.
Nope.
The Murder Hornets.
Oh, the Murder Hornets. The Dust Cloud that came over.
Yeah, the Dust Cloud. That was just like, hey.
Hey.
Elon Musk shot his big, big rocket.
Oh, did he?
Up into the sky.
I missed that one.
It came down, it landed. That was good.
Trump did that picture in front of that church with the Bible.
That was fun.
People are being gassed.
Just the normal stuff.
2020 is great.
2020 is wonderful.
Largest unemployment numbers ever. Michigan didn't have any unemployment. Mass layoffs. Businesses closing. And now it's July.
So this is hopefully this is a mullet year where the business is all up front and in the back.
It's a party. It's
partying all the way.
It better be, damn it.
Let's just forget this year happened and start 2020 again next year.
So I didn't do that recap to be a downer. It was more like, here are the headlines I recall.
Well, I see a lot of headlines, and a lot of people on social media are talking about headlines. And that makes, that's like, they call it, what is it, like doom surfing? Where you're just scrolling and scrolling forever and everything's terrible. And you sort of like glaze over.
Isn't that just
eyes.
Facebook? I'm on Facebook all the time anyway because I'm breastfeeding for 300 hours a day. But I mean, that's just what it is.
That's just what it is. It's the endless hole of information, and I don't even know if it's that, but we love it. We can't get enough of it, of Mark Zuckerberg's big hole of words and pictures. And there's a lot of stuff out there, Stephanie. It's hard to parse.
Oh, the generational wars that keep happening where it's boomers versus millennials
masks and masks.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, but yes, the Generation Z is...
Generation Z is...
burning millennials, and that's super fun.
We spent a whole week watching them burn us, and it was the best.
It was amazing.
They're right. We suck. I'm okay
with
that.
It's fine. It's like, whatever. I have live, laugh, love. I'll get my pumpkin spice latte and just like leave me alone. Like,
I don't live, laugh, love. I don't love those. I do love pumpkin spice.
It is wine o'clock someday.
Every day.
Every day. I've made an artisan soap.
Gracia is my favorite color.
I've used artisan ice cubes. Like, sue me, Zennials.
I think
whatever.
My favorite burn. So, to backtrack it. Gen Z Zennials were totally burning millennials and doing all these tweets about why we suck. So Dal and I were reading through these, or they weren't tweets. They don't use, it was TikTok.
It's like Harry Potter's a personality.
Oh my God,
trait.
How old am I? It's like they were tweeting. They were not on Twitter. Yeah, they were on TikTok. So they were talking. I don't even know.
TikToking.
But I think my favorite one was why do millennials use adulting? Like,
I have to buy laundry detergent. Adulting.
It's like, you're not adulting. You're just alive.
You're just doing what you're supposed to do.
And then there was another one that was like, why is taking a bath considered self-care? You should just be bathing.
Oh, and how we're all about self-love. You gotta have like self-care, self-love.
And they're like, yeah, why wouldn't you just like yourself?
I think the big culture difference is that for like last year, millennials were burning boomers. And all the boomers got so mad that OK Boomer was like, it's like a slur, and calling people Karen is a slur. And then, you know, Gen Z burns us and we're like, nah, we don't. Yeah, it's fine.
It's true.
It's true. You're
all
not
of
wrong.
These things
You're
not are
wrong.
True.
I definitely wore suspenders. I, you know, it's OK. You can burn me for that. Roast me for that. It's fine.
I think it's funny. It like puts in front of me some of the obnoxious things I'm doing that I'm. Oh, there's another one about how every idiot has a podcast. It's like, why does anyone want to listen to you talk? It's like,
Well, it's true. But so, Stephanie, why do people want to listen to us talk, especially this episode? We are out of the cave. We've come out. We are here. It must be for some big occasion.
Well, so we're a podcast where we usually review a research article where the research is usually about relationships, which means we get to talk about whatever we want.
It turns out when you live with a person, everything is a relationship issue.
Yeah, the good part about people usually being around is you can do whatever you want. So so we normally do a relationship article torn from the headlines and then talk about it. And the goal of it is research or something that kind of helps you improve your day-to-day life with others.
Yeah. Parse out that hot new relationship research that's coming out of the love lab.
Yeah, because I don't know if you know this, but sometimes it's really hard to get along with people.
It's true. It's very, relationships would be great if it weren't for
people. But 2020 is going great. No one's fighting.
I just keep on following people, and it just gets better and better. I think I have perfect Facebook right now.
Do you?
And perfect Instagram. You just unfollow enough people, it just becomes more and more perfect.
I follow so many celebrities on Instagram that I feel like I'm friends with them.
Aww.
It can't be true.
Well, while Stephanie thinks about all of her Instagram friends, we're going to take a little break. And then when we come back, I think Stephanie's got some... Okay, Stephanie. So, back from hiatus, we're podcasting once again. What are you going to bring in season three? Is this season three? Season three is here.
I don't know. Whatever it is. We're here.
We're here.
Episode 200. But
100?
I don't know.
And 36.
Oh, that's pretty cool.
Yeah.
So, we're in the middle of a pandemic.
Mm-hmm.
Well, yeah. So, there's a pandemic going
on.
It could
be at the very beginning of it. I don't even know.
Yeah.
Who knows?
No one knows.
We're definitely not near the end, that's for sure.
And so this isn't a research article. Instead, I've gotten messages, and I think you've gotten a few, where people have asked about data specifically related to COVID and the pandemic.
Because I've heard that none of the data is real. Every death is a COVID death. People get in a car crash and it's COVID. And so I can't trust the data. How do I know what's true? When my friend, who says it's not true.
So you know this guy, and he like posted something on Facebook, so we like totally know
it. Yeah, I know that. And there's a conspiracy, and there's the deep state, and how do I know that everything is just not fake? And it's a conspiracy. I don't know how to trust the data, babe.
Well, and I think, to be fair.
To be fair.
I think there is... a lot of data, and like if your background isn't in data or statistics or anything, why would you know about that?
Mm-hmm.
My background is in data and statistics and numbers and research, but I couldn't tell you how to like cut hair or put down cement or do a slew of other things.
Mm-hmm.
And why should I? Like, that's not what I do every day. No one pays me to do that.
You're like a Paul Hollywood of data. If I made a spreadsheet, you would tell me that it was a soggy bottom.
I remember the other day you told me, you're like, oh, I'm missing something on a spreadsheet. And I was like, do you want to feed the baby while I go look for it?
And I was like, no, stay away. You'll make me feel bad.
I was like, oh, looking for data on a spreadsheet sounds like fun.
It was $600 in multi-millions of dollars. And I did find it.
Good.
You know.
Anyway. But before you left, I was like, don't forget about if statements.
And I'm like, I don't even know what that is. Get away from me. Just let me go do my job.
But anyway, like, I thought we would do a podcast. And there's probably articles on this, but you'd have to put them all together. But instead, I just thought we'd do a general 101 topic of how to interpret data. And I'm not going to talk about COVID data specifically, but this is just kind of a general overview to give you a 101 crash course and things that you should look for.
I'm a Karen or a Kevin, and I see Jim post some fun data about masks or sandwiches, and I want to know if it's real before I pass it along.
Yeah, something like that, or if you're wondering why... one data source looks different from another data source. Here's a way that you can kind of start going through that.
Okay.
That being said, like, this isn't meant to arm people so that way you can be like a gotcha or someone that's whatever. It's meant to be more of a, like, here's a way to look at it and help yourself.
Like a media literacy. Here's how, for self-improvement purposes, you can just have a more fulfilling internet experience.
Yeah.
I like that. Okay, so, Stephanie, teach me the ways... 101, how to interpret data.
Well, first I have to start with my favorite data quote.
Half of everything is true.
No, I
hate 50% of everything
quote.
Is possible.
First of all, why are we following anything Mark Twain says about data?
My grandfather, when he took me golfing, said, trees are 70% air. I don't think that's true.
I don't know.
But how would I know? Tell me, Stephanie.
Okay. Data quote.
Yeah.
So the data quote that I love is data can be used three ways. Mm-hmm. And data is like a lamppost, right? I'm sure you've heard me say this before.
Okay, yeah. The lamppost.
Data is like a lamppost. You can pee all over it like a dog.
Oh.
Lean on it like a streetwalker.
Like, come on, just tap and see me sometime.
Or you can use it to illuminate.
Aww.
So the way that I look at data is, how can we use it to illuminate things? The way I don't look at data is, I don't use it to pee all over things,
mm-hmm.
and I don't just lean on it. I try to use it to, like, find the story of what's going on. Mm. That being said, no data is perfect. No statistician is perfect. No data model will ever be perfect. If anyone ever tells you it is perfect, they're lying. Like, run away. Because anyone that's worth their salt will quickly tell you the good, the bad, the caveats, the yeses, the noes of their data, their statistics, their models.
Mm-hmm.
And anyone who says otherwise is either a prophet or a narcissist.
So when Jim tells me his data says masks will make you worship Satan, here's the data, it's probably not 100% perfect.
Probably not.
Okay, good to know. Good to know.
And then for this podcast, I'm not necessarily talking about how to evaluate advanced statistical modeling, because I feel like someone actually sent me a guy that does statistical modeling on COVID, and I pulled it up on my phone, but it's he does so much stuff that I was like, I'm going to have to pull up on my laptop and spend a few hours looking through this.
This is not smartphone stuff. This is serious business, laptop business.
It's true, because he has a lot of like charts and modeling and graphs. And on my phone, his website wasn't responsive to my phone.
Mm. Well, that's just not good SEO.
I thought about that. So, but anyway, like maybe he's a genius and great, but like... The guy does advanced statistical modeling, which is probably too much for any one person to talk about on a podcast, I would think. Well, if they're talking about it, they're way better than I am.
If you think about it, it exists on the internet. That's the rule.
Yeah.
But yeah, so we're not going to talk about that, because that actually takes some, like, years of learning.
Well, it's more like, I guess I could do it in three sentences, but that just probably wouldn't be helpful, right?
Mm, it's for nerds. Just say it's for big nerds, and we are cool guys and gals, and that's what we're going to talk about. Oh, yeah. Tiger King happened, too.
Oh, Tiger King. That was so
Remember
long ago.
Remember that? Cool guy, cool kittens, cats and kittens.
I know. When someone was like, Tiger King was the first part of COVID, I was like, oh my gosh.
Those are the good old days.
I know.
Okay, anyway.
Oh, you're so hopeful.
Continue.
So some terms to know ahead of time that I'll probably just throw around or use interchangeably are data set.
Mm-hmm.
If you don't know what a data set is, it's imagine an Excel spreadsheet, and it's a bunch of numbers on an Excel spreadsheet. And normally those numbers are assigned to like a person or an event or something that happens.
Mm.
But a data set is just anytime there's data that exists, it's like where all the numbers are kind of stored in one big place.
It's kind of like a set of data.
Yeah, but I remember like when, whoops, I'm getting messages. Let me turn that off. So when someone first said, you're going to work with a data set, I had no clue what they were talking about. So I always wanted to define that. Oh, where do data sets exist?
Where do they exist?
So you can, depending on the source, you can download them online for free, like the CDC data. There's Pew data sets. There's public information data sets. Anytime there's a survey, like those are out there. The U.S. Census Bureau lets you download a bunch of data.
So I run a Facebook page.
Oh, yeah.
For my Facebook group, Cakes, Cakes, Cakes. And you get analysis in a dashboard.
Oh, yeah.
Likes, dislikes. But they also have Excel sheets that you can download.
Perfect
example.
So that's
like a data set.
That's a data set.
Because it's not processed. It's just raw. Like, here's all the numbers.
Yes.
Okay.
Data in a set. That's a data set.
Got it.
And then the second term that might come out there is that are kind of used in the data world but are called different things but used by different people differently are a code book or data specifications.
Mm.
A code book is telling you, when you get a data set, there's a number a lot of times, mm-hmm. like 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. And sometimes that number really stands for a number. Like, how many pieces of pizza did you eat last night? I ate 5.
1, 2, 3, 4, 5. I don't know.
But sometimes the 5 stands for what's your favorite animal, and 5 is a lion, 4 is a sea lion, 3 is a turtle. So the code book tells you when the number is assigned to a certain value.
Okay.
Or sometimes there's data specifications. They're kind of similar things. So data specifications say, this is what the data should be. This mm-hmm. is what I'm looking at. Okay. They're a little bit different, not exactly the same, but data specifications and code books are similar because they're giving you an overview of what the data is.
And so this is what the nerds look at before they put it into a BuzzFeed article.
This is, whenever I download a data set, I always read the code book or the data specifications. Okay. Or whenever I have to upload data, you have to read the data specifications.
Where does the data come from? Is it someone doing research or what?
You're kind of getting ahead of it.
Okay. Sorry.
It comes from everywhere.
Everywhere.
And nowhere.
Oh, okay. Sorry for getting ahead. Continue.
That's such a big question. Like, there's so much data out there mm-hmm. that there's like petabytes of data generated every second. So, anyway. And then for the purposes of this podcast, we're going to talk about quantitative data instead of qualitative. Nowadays in research, some of those things are overlapping and complex and really political. But by quantitative, I mean, we're going to be talking about the code book, the data set. We're going to be talking about an event or a person that happened and we've ascribed a number to them mm-hmm. versus like terminology and emotion and meaning.
Okay, so this is just numbers, baby.
Yeah, mostly.
Okay.
I mean, nothing is devoid of meaning, but whatever, it's getting too philosophical.
Okay, I got it. Oh man, this could get real deep real quick.
Yeah, I know, right?
I want to talk philosophically about data. Maybe next time.
You probably do. Yeah, maybe next time. And so the basic, so that's the general data terms. But then whenever you're looking at data nowadays, I'm not going to get deep into how you analyze data, but you should be good enough, or you should know a few key analytical terms.
Yeah, what's the cheat codes where I'm reading an article and they're throwing around numbers? How do I know if what they're saying is, if it's right?
Exactly. Yeah. But that's kind of where we cross the line into, is it, are we looking at the data set or are we evaluating the analytical methodology? And this is kind of where we get...
So it's not just one data means it's all this, this has one meaning. It can be interpreted different ways.
Yeah. Oh, I mean, okay. It depends on how you're using it, where you're using it for. Mm. But for analytics, the basic terms that you need to know, and I did tailor this part a little bit to COVID, are whether someone... So when you read an article... Mm-hmm. from the New York Times, the Free Press, or whatever, and they have a chart or a graph. Mm-hmm. Generally speaking, the way that they're going to report data, they're only going to report it in a few ways.
Okay.
And the analysis that they're going to report out is probably going to be either a count of something. Mm-hmm. An account of something is just saying, this is the frequency or the tally of how many times an event happened.
Okay.
So, how many times were you in a car accident in your life?
Twice.
Two. So okay. Your count would be 2.
Okay.
Something that's getting reported as a count for COVID in some cases is the number of deaths. Mm-hmm. That is a count. How many? Ooh.
Number of ventilators.
Number of ventilators.
Tests. Number of people who got better.
Correct.
Okay. I see those charts every day on Michigan websites of like the up and downs of here's how many people tested positive.
Yeah, but counts in journalist data are usually reported a lot. How many homicides there were, how mm-hmm. many suicides there were, etc. Okay.
And that's all data.
Yeah.
Mm, okay.
All data from a data set that's reported, blah, blah, blah. Mm. But then the next two words that you need to know that's going to bring you back to grade school are the numerator and the denominator.
Ooh.
The numerator is usually the top number, which is smaller, and the denominator is the bottom number, which is the bigger number. The denominator is reporting everyone in the population that you want to be talking about, so all of the people in the United States. And then the numerator is usually reporting the number of people that meet your data specifications within a code book.
Oh, so like 2 out of 50.
Correct.
50 being the denominator.
2 out of 50. Yep.
Okay.
And that's important because knowing why is someone in the numerator and why is someone in the denominator, mm-hmm. and whether those are correct. Because I've seen a lot of data where the numerator and denominator are crap and incorrect.
I feel that this is a topic that makes you upset, because I feel like once or twice I've heard you on the phone saying something about the denominator is wrong and they're stupid.
I saw something that was someone reported the death rate in the United States for COVID, but the denominator was everyone in the population, okay. which was stupid.
Oh.
It's like, why would you report that so many people in the U.S. have died? I'm like, your denominator would be everyone that's gotten COVID.
Mm-hmm.
It wouldn't. So I lost my whatever. But it's important to know the numerator and the denominator, because when you take the numerator, the top smaller number, and divide it by the denominator, you get the rate.
Mm.
And so what's really important here and what I'm building up to is in journalism, wherever, you're going to sometimes see a count reported, which mm-hmm. is number of deaths. But sometimes you might see the rate.
Yeah.
And the rate for COVID generally has been getting reported as the number of deaths divided by 100,000 or like mm-hmm. a population or something like that. Yeah. And so sometimes you'd want to report the count.
Mm-hmm.
So you'd want to report the count if it's a really small number of cases, it's not frequently happening, it's a new event.
Mm-hmm.
But you'd want to report the rate if you want to be able to compare across populations.
Okay.
So if you want to understand why Arkansas is different than Alabama, well, let me give you another example. So what's the population of California?
I don't know.
It's either.
Like the fourth largest country in the world or something.
California is massive. But what's the population of Rhode Island? Like 20.
Like two people.
If you live in Rhode Island, tell me.
I don't care if they live in Rhode Island.
But if I want to compare how like COVID deaths in Rhode Island are comparing to California, if I report just the number, it's going to look like California all day is horrible because their population is so much bigger.
Oh, okay. So it's like percentages, kind of bringing them closer together.
Yeah. I mean, so it's a way to kind of be able to compare California and Rhode Island and have more apples to apples-ish.
Okay. So it's like the numbers are very different, but it's a similar rate.
It could be. Yeah, yeah, like they
it
might
could,
have
or
similar
it
rates.
Could be, or the rates would tell a clearer picture of the story.
Yeah, because California could be at 5,000 right. and Rhode Island could be at 100, but maybe we look at the rate and the rate in Rhode Island's actually a lot higher. Yeah. I don't know.
There's not enough people in Rhode Island to get as sick as the people in
or,
California
not
are.
Yeah. They just have different populations.
Yeah, okay, I get that. So the rate is, I get it.
So sometimes you want the count, sometimes you want the rate. But if you see them reported differently, like, they're not right or wrong necessarily. You just need to know why they're doing what they're doing.
Context.
Yep. And then the last thing that you'll see that I'm not going to get too far into, because then this is where we verge into modeling our the measure of central tendency.
Oh, that sounds interesting.
So the measure of central tendency, this is when we get into statistics and we talk about a standard normalized distribution, blah, 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 and you want to see how the data is distributed and whether it's even or whatever. But the measure of central tendency is saying when I line all of my data up in a data set, like what number is in the middle and what does that number mean? And so in statistics, it's the mean, median. Oh my gosh, I'm playing. The mean, the
average?
Median, and the mode.
Oh, not average?
Some people will fight. I think we've talked about this before. Some people will fight over whether it's mean or average.
Mm-hmm.
And I tend to use them interchangeably. But
they're both kind of negative words, like you're average or you're mean. They're both like not great words.
But sometimes people will report the mean or average. Sometimes they'll report the median. Sometimes they'll report the mode. The mode is the number that occurs most frequently. So if you have 100 numbers
mm-hmm.
and the number 55 occurs 8 times, that's your mode. If it occurs more.
Okay.
The median is the number that's smack dab in the middle when you line up all your numbers in ascending or descending order.
Mm-hmm.
And then the average is when you take all of the numbers that you have in your data set, add them together, and divide them by the total numbers that you have.
I feel like out of those, an average might not be as accurate because I've heard about, like, outliers. That's an outlier.
So it depends on your data. If you look at your data and it's normally distributed, an average is perfectly fine.
Oh, okay.
But for income, there's a lot of rich people and there's a lot of people that don't make a lot of money. So reporting the median tends to be better, so that goes, it accounts for outliers.
It's a little more, okay, it's a little more clear.
But I haven't really seen a lot of averages and medians and modes with COVID specifically. But I thought, like, if you see a median or an average, I see people use them interchangeably and it gets really annoying to me. I'm talking to you, MLive.
You are on notice, MLive. Come and get us.
Okay. So that's kind of the background of data. Like, those are your basic terms and mm-hmm. guts. Like, if you were doing a stats course, that would probably take you through the first two or three chapters of a 115, 110 course.
Well, wonderful.
Yeah, you're already done.
So now I know about modes. I know about denominators. I'm ready to read my article. What else should I know?
So before you read any article or see any bit of data, I wrote down, how many questions did I write down? 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6.
What if it's a pie
six
chart?
6 questions. We're not going to talk about pie charts.
Aww. Our baby's asleep, but Stephanie hates pie charts. That's another episode, I think.
I don't hate all pie charts. It's just like if you're reporting data with 10 categories and you're using a pie chart, like, you can't tell the difference between them. It's just... A guy I work with, though, got real mad about someone over a bar chart, which I hadn't seen.
Really?
It's interesting.
Interesting. Okay, well, okay, you got your questions.
Yep.
What are the questions that I need to know when I sit down with my article?
So when you sit down with your article or see it, the first thing that you should look for is, what's the source of the data? And so, like, I mean, where is it coming from and who's reporting it? Because there's Johns Hopkins is reporting data on COVID. The CDC did have access to data. But if you're reading a different article, like, if someone's reporting the data, you need to know where it's coming from.
Like, what if I read a blog from, like, naturemama.com? Would that data be good?
First off, they're probably not going to cite it because they're too... Whatever.
Cite your data.
So if they're not citing the data at all, that should be a red flag. Oh. So it should say in the corner somewhere, source, and then it should say where the data is coming from.
I always look for, like, the hyperlinks. Whenever exactly. they do a number, if they have a number and it's not hyperlinked, then I'm like,
That's a good point, though, because I read a Forbes article that covered some newer research, and they linked back to the original article.
Yeah.
Well, the original peer-reviewed article. So then I ran and read the peer-reviewed article rather than reading. Well, I read the Forbes thing too, but.
Because a lot of times if it's a well-read article or written article, it'll link to, like, the journal that you can read. And I just read that instead. Like, I don't need to know some jabroni's interpretation. I can find it myself.
I mean, now we're kind of getting into backlinking or whatever. But if your website is linking back to the original source, that's a good sign that they're a well-built website because they understand the importance of linking,
mm-hmm.
Which is just means your website's probably
right. So look for the sources.
Look for the sources. And then the next thing that you need to consider whenever you look at data in any way, like once you figure out where it's from, sometimes this takes experience, but sometimes, I mean this in the nicest way possible, just like don't be a stupid person and ask yourself, how could errors get into the data?
Oh.
And no data is perfect. No data ever will be perfect. So if you're, like, looking at data and if there's a million people in your data set and there's 3 errors, oh, my God, who cares?
Mm-hmm.
Like, no one cares. Just, like, move on with your day.
Like, my friend's a nurse, and they said that a bus got hit with a tornado and 2 people, they said, died of COVID.
And, like, part of me is, like, I want to empathize with that because that's difficult. But a lot of me is, like, yeah, there's still, like, 200 million data points, so... Like, what we're looking at there is the numerator and the denominator and your error rate, and that data is so low that, like, it's not really going to mess up your story, what you're telling, what you're doing.
Mm. Oh, but, I think that story, it's like you're trying to direct people to the story with, like, data.
What picture is this data painting?
Oh, okay.
And with or without this error, will the story change?
That's, like, a mind-blowing way of thinking about data. Because I yeah. feel that it's because it's math, and people think math is perfect. And, you know, it was hard for me in school, and you see data, and you're like, oh, it's infallible. But if you look at it in more of like a storytelling function, I think that that's really powerful.
Well, and so when you're looking at data, you need to think about how error could get into the data.
Here, conspiracy.
Here I'm going to talk about the COVID data because it's important to understand how it's reported. Mm-hmm. And so generally it's hospitals who were given data specifications and asked to report them into the CDC.
Okay.
And they were asked to report on like positive COVID cases, right?
Right.
Well, they have 90 some data points, but anyway, so like logically, a logical person can say, oh, here's how an error could happen in the reporting.
Mm-hmm.
So a lab result could be wrong. Right. Because labs aren't perfect.
Mm-hmm. And they said the testing is like, what, 70% accurate or 60%?
Don't just make up a statistic on that right
50%?
Now. 50%? Honey. We're going to rewind that back.
Am I close?
Okay.
I take it back.
Take it back. Because I don't back. Know. I don't know the. Okay. I know. I
but.
Know. If we're talking about data accuracy right now, we shouldn't be.
Okay. So there's a 50% chance.
Oh, God. Just stop. what were we talking about?
Take a deep breath. How inaccuracies could happen in your data.
So it could be someone just throwing out a random number, like on a podcast.
If you're listening to this and I say numbers, don't listen to me. But if Stephanie says them, you should listen to her.
Okay. So a lab result might be inaccurately reported or something like that. There could be data lag. So sometimes... Ooh. Sometimes data could be reported at 12:01 in the morning, but like you're only capturing what happened from the night before. So there could be a time lag issue.
Okay.
There's a lot of ways that error can, if you're doing surveys, I don't know. So you really.
Self-reported data.
So that being said, like no data is perfect. It's not about everything being fantastic. It's about thinking, okay, like where could error get in? But then. Most data sets and most people that are reporting it will say, here's my rate of error or what I think it is. Like out of all the data, here's my percentage that I think is going to have a boo-boo.
What's a good rate of error?
It really depends on the data that you're reporting and what you're talking about. And it depends on how big your data is. Because, I mean, if you're reporting survey data on how people feel about cold cereal, who cares? Do you know what I mean? Like if your error rate is plus or minus 10%, it's like, okay, great.
Mm-hmm.
But if you're talking about something really important that has a lot of meaning to people, like unemployment numbers, you want that error to be really, really low because you're talking about jobs, which is the economy.
People's lives.
People's livelihood. Yeah. Right. So like it depends on what you're talking about. So this is like the art and science of data because people want an easy answer like 5% or 3%. And most people would tell you 3 to 5.
Yeah.
But really, like, you just need to know what you're talking about. It's the art of it versus the here is the rule.
So interesting. Okay.
But someone else, another data scientist might give you a number.
Oh.
I don't know. Oh, I kind of bled into the next question, which I don't know. So the next question you should ask is, how clean should the data be?
I like that. Clean, sparkly. Eat off the data.
It's called good data hygiene.
Data, like your floss? Yep. Whenever I think hygiene. Floss, brush your teeth. Wipe. That's it.
And so, generally speaking, in our world, like what we know is financial data tends to be the best because it's reporting something that everybody cares about, which is money.
Yeah, money, money, money.
But we've already kind of covered this. So like logically as a person, think about how important this data is and how you're going to use it. And then think about, does this need to be perfect? Or if it is off, why?
Mm-hmm. Okay.
The next thing that you should think about with the data, and this happens a lot, is you need to look at the data set, look at the code book, look at what's in it, and understand what questions can this data actually answer? Mm-hmm. And is someone using the data inappropriately to try to answer a question that the data should not be answering?
Do people do that?
All the time.
All the time?
Every time.
Oh, boy.
Sometimes people like throw out a number or a rate or use a data set.
Like 40% of the time. the data is just not right.
Yeah, I know. Or I'm trying to think of a good example.
Yeah, what's a big, good example that you've seen?
Oh, I'm just trying to think of a great one, but I feel like I've seen so much data that it's all just whirling around in my head.
Oh, I think of one. Go. There was two hospital guys a couple of months ago had a video talking about how COVID is baloney and that everyone should be fine and we're doctors, blah, blah, blah. And they used data and they extrapolated upon data from California.
Oh,
and
yeah.
They didn't interpret the data correctly across, like, how it should have been. Because I remember you talking about it, and I don't remember the details exactly, but this whole thing hinged on this argument of this number can go out to this number, but they were extrapolating California data, not national data.
I didn't watch that video, nor did I watch the critiques of it.
Okay.
But from what I'm hearing you saying is they used a data set on one specific geography right. and applied it more broadly than they should
that
have.
That was exactly what they did. And that, and they ended up with these numbers that were ludicrous because they were all based on like California population numbers.
But that's, I think you're bringing up a good point though, and something that we've talked about when we've talked about research from the UK,
mm-hmm.
like survey research or something like that
Europe, and we have a lot of relationship studies from Germany or whatever.
And we'll usually say like, this is from Germany, so it's interesting, like here's the concepts, but it might not apply because Germany is Germany.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So look for that. Like look for maybe odd uses of data,
or if you're looking at the data and you're like, well, I don't know if this set of data should be used to address these questions.
Data from California might not directly apply to how things are going in Indiana.
Well, yeah, and like when I was doing my master's thesis, I did my master's thesis on women that had 0, 1, or 2 or more abortions.
Mm-hmm.
And so for me to find a data set that could address that, I needed to have in my data set, I needed to have women, the number of abortions they had over their lifetime. But then because my data was couched in theory and research, I had to make sure that the data set also had their race, their educational status, their mother's educational status, their sexual history, and a bunch of other things.
Mm-hmm.
And in order for that data to exist, someone had to do a survey and ask people those questions.
Woo.
So it took me, I think, a year to find a data set that I could use that would address the questions that were appropriate for what I was doing.
Okay, wow. So you can't just, like, Google whatever and whatever you come upon, you can just use that.
Yeah, you can't. I wish you could, but you can't.
You can't.
Time, like, the time is important. Is the data set from, are you doing social media research, but your data set's from 2010?
Ooh.
That could be a huge
irrelevant.
Issue. Yeah, it's like, oh my goodness, it's 10 years ago. Let's even...
Oh, a picture came up of me from 10 years ago in my social media flashback, and I look like a child. It's ridiculous.
Bet you do. You've aged well, though.
I do. I have some nice grays now. And
you're adorable.
And way more wrinkles in my face.
I'd hit that.
You get the old man version.
The next thing to... George is slowly waking up. It's adorable. She also grunts a lot when she sleeps.
She's like Gollum in Harry Potter. No, Gollum in Lord of the Rings. She's... All night long.
So the next thing to ask, or the next good question to think about is, does the source of the data have some conflicting interest?
Oh.
So when I was
like,
in...
Is it from big... cigarettes, telling me that cigarettes
Truth.
Are best for me.
Like, flip to the last page and say, like, look at who sponsored their research. I'm not kidding. When I was in grad school, our professor played a trick on us, and he had us read this research. I don't even remember what the research article was. But we read this article, and it was 20 pages, and then he had us critique it and walk back forth, blah, 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 and we talked about it for an hour. And then he goes, what do you think of it? And we were all like, oh, it's this, it's great, it's bad. And then he goes, you didn't notice who sponsored it, did you? Mm. And it was sponsored by some, like, company that just paid for the research to say whatever they wanted it to say.
So say I had a research that I was reading, and it was why dogs are bad pets, and it was sponsored at the end by cats.
Perfect example.
Okay, got it.
Sponsored by Garfield.
Sponsored by Garfield and other small animals.
But, like, it's important to understand who's paying for the research to get done. And then it's also important to understand who's doing the research.
So Bill Gates might not be doing all the research about the vaccines and the masks because he wants to rule all of us.
I don't know, honey. You're just getting too, like... I'm losing my train of thought.
So look who sponsored it.
Yeah.
Okay.
And then look at who's doing the research. The first thing I usually do when someone sends me the research is look at who's doing it, the university it's from, who sponsored it. And then I look up all of the professors or people that did the research, and then I look up their backgrounds.
So, like, I see a paper, and it's from Professor Douglas, and he teaches at the University of Jim's Good Times. And I could probably say, nothing against this college, but it might not be as reputable as, like, Harvard.
Well, yeah, and that's not to say that research from certain colleges is going to be any less credible or bad necessarily, but there are some research powerhouses that just pump out the good stuff.
Like, body of work and reputation is important.
Yeah.
Like, it's like with anything else. If you're, like, it's if something comes out of left field and it's awesome, it's like, that's great, but that doesn't happen all the time. And it's okay to be a little suspicious.
Well, I think... Again, like, research isn't perfect, and it's not meant to answer every question. It's meant to answer one or two specific questions very specifically. Hmm. There's a billion questions in this world. Like, we're only looking at the smallest sliver of it.
Ooh.
Yeah.
So I have one question.
Yeah.
COVID question.
Yeah.
Because when Aunt Jerry says that all of these deaths are because of a giant accident at the aquarium, and they're all COVID deaths. How does COVID information like that get tracked at the hospital? Like, from where does it start to, like, what's the pathway? Like, how does it get to you at the end?
I can tell you, so every, trying to think of, like, the most concise way to say this. I'm just going to tell you what I know we did.
Okay.
So, and everything I'm saying now is my personal experience and not related to my employer or anything like that. But the Affordable Health Care Act made it so that way most hospitals now have to have an electronic medical record system, which means that if you're a patient in a hospital, your medical record is now electronic, which means it's on a computer and you have your own little data set behind you.
Ooh, I know. Look it up and see how many times I've been to the doctor.
So generally, COVID tests were your lab does a test on you as a patient, comes back positive or negative, and then we reported whether that was positive or negative. For COVID deaths, it was someone that had a positive COVID test and died. That might have changed over time because I've been on maternity leave for a little while, and I don't think the specs were as clear then. That being said, I think the question that people had was whether the COVID death should be the cause of death or related to, because people were like, well, we want a medical examiner to examine every single body and determine whether they died of COVID or had another thing, but were also COVID positive.
It's a hard thing to get every single person in the world to follow those rules.
Yeah. In 4 weeks, are you kidding me? It took hospitals years to go live on an electronic medical record system. Like, the data is not all going to be perfect. So then the question becomes, like, I don't know. It's just kind of a fight over how you think it should be reported, which kind of gets down to, I don't know. I'm not an epidemiologist, well, so they're a default to them.
I feel that it kind of all comes back to what you said about what is the data telling us as a story. Like, you might have one or two things here and there that are fuzzy and don't, you know, don't make sense. But overall, what is it saying? Like, I'm not a data expert, but I've done a lot of coaching with people on, like, social media and looking at their analytics and stuff. And it's like, well, I had 2 likes this day and 5 likes this day. And what does this mean? And I'm just like, hey, man. If you're going up over time, like, the story is you're doing a good job and people are engaging, and, like, that's what's important. So, like, I guess kind of what you're saying is, like, when you're looking at COVID or up and down or masks or whatever, that what's important is, like, what is the general story that can be told?
Yeah. I'm just kind of going back to the death part because I feel like I don't have expertise necessarily to say, like, this is how it should be done because, like, I don't have the expertise to say, someone that's doing, examining someone at, oh my gosh, the coroner, the medical examiner.
Yeah.
Oh my gosh.
You know,
I'm just tired and losing words.
You know, some cities, they vote for a coroner.
Really?
It's an elected position. When I grew up in Illinois, Kankakee, Illinois, the coroner was an elected position. And I always thought that was very weird.
Did you have to have any credentials to do that?
No.
Or was it just like...
I mean, I guess you should.
I would hope.
I don't know. But, yeah. No, Stephanie, I believe what you're saying is very honorable because I do feel that we're in a world where there's a lot of value with knowing what you're good at and letting the experts do what they do. Like, I think sometimes we have too much people just saying, I just will decide for myself. It's like, no, we have experts who spent time learning how to do these things the right way.
Well, and where my expertise runs out here is, like, I can tell you the data, how it's reported, why we reported it that way.
Yeah.
But I'm not a doctor, a nurse, an epidemiologist, a pathologist, anything there. So the second that knowledge starts crossing into there, like, I just kind of shut up because I'm like, yeah, I don't know. Yeah. And I'm not about to tell you something where I don't feel very, if I don't feel super duper confident about it, I'm just not going to talk about it.
You know what makes you a team player?
Yeah.
You got in teamwork makes the dream work.
Well, in healthcare, I work in healthcare, it's way more complex than anyone. They tell you it's complex when you go in, and the longer you're in it, the more you're just like, yeah, I don't know.
Yeah. Wow, you were right.
Some days I feel smart. Most days I feel dumb. I don't know.
Well, today, in this podcast hour that we've been podcasting, you are very smart.
I'm not trying to be smart or a know-it-all or anything. It's just like, I feel like there's a lot of data out there and people are confused, so...
I see. No, it is very important. And I think whatever expertise you've brought to this table has been awesome. And I'm very grateful because you've enlightened me. And I really think that, you know, I'm not going to use this to go, like, beat up people online about it, but just to be... There's such an importance to being a well-educated, well-hygienic reader of information. And I feel like in social media, it's so easy to get things mixed up. And so having the tools to interpret information in the way it was intended is really, really, really helpful. And anything we can do to pass that information on to people and educate people on that, I think is A-okay in my book.
That being said, James, if you're still listening and haven't tuned out, our friend James, I think his master's is in...
Epidemiology.
Is it epidemiology or health administration?
No. It's about finding diseases and fighting them with his bare hands.
Pretty much. Anyway, he's probably way better at this topic than either Del or I. So if James wants to weigh in on anything.
James, get on in here. If you're listening, give me a text and we'll get you on the episode. And if you don't text me, I'll know you're not listening. Well, Stephanie, I think you did a good job. I'm educated. I know so much more. I feel more empowered to go tackle my social media again. I'm ready to go watch some Love Island and eat some ice cream.
And I'm going to feed the baby.
Yeah. So, Stephanie, any final words about what we've been talking about?
What? Sorry, I'm so tired.
All right. Well, we're
on like 5 hours.
You're off,
like,
the clock. You've done your job here. Thank you, everybody. So everybody, that's Stephanie. She did a good job. Again, we're back. This is Learn to Like Each Other. And thanks for hanging out there in the podcast world, waiting on bated breath for us. And we're back and we're glad to be here with you again. So I hope you enjoyed this episode. And if you did, please share it. Again, I know data in information and misinformation about data is rampant. So if you know someone who is looking for more information, or you know someone who is wildly misled when what they are saying, feel free to share our episode, and we'd love to hear from you too. So you can find us on Facebook, and we hope that after listening to this podcast, you should come